The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Fed in Focus Hour. Carmen Reinhart sat down with us in Jackson Hole on Saturday after the event had wound up to give us her thoughts. Professor of Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, co-author with Ken Rogoff of This Time It's Different. Here's what she had to say about Fed policy in emerging markets. Many big questions, some of them in the air for the past 2 years, but a focus, especially this year, on the global aspect and emerging markets. The question of Fed tapering was raised at the G20. It was a big deal there. It seems like it's a big deal here. What were the conversations like, Carmen? What is the takeaway from this?
Well, I think this year's conference was very much focused on the exit strategies for the U.S. and possibly the U.K., but really about the U.S., from monetary policy. That is very much intertwined with the discussion of global capital flows, and particularly capital flow reversals, and what rising interest rates could mean for emerging markets. And so emerging markets turning points were very much at the center of discussion as well in this year's conference. If you look back over the last few years, emerging markets were seen as the high growth engine in this rather dismal global environment. That very much changed this year.
The consensus seems to be that emerging markets need to take care of themselves domestically because the U.S. needs to take care of itself domestically. However, that's not much consolation for the emerging markets that have seen such a huge sell-off, particularly since the last FOMC meeting. Were there any other ideas for emerging markets?
New ideas? Not really. We have seen this movie before. When interest rates have risen in the United States, it almost without exception has not been good news for emerging markets that had been enjoying capital flow bonanzas, and this time is no different. I think much of the discussion and some of the papers dealt with the issue that, shouldn't monetary policy at the center in the U.S. take into account its impacts on the rest of the world? That is also not a new issue, but I think realistically, the U.S. exit will be determined by domestic considerations regarding inflation and employment and growth in the U.S., not by the ramifications it has for emerging markets. So I think, not surprisingly, old discussions of capital controls, structural reforms, fiscal adjustment and such came to the, you know, to the foreground when emerging markets were discussed at all.
Is then there a bit more of a serious consideration? Because for the longest time, those capital controls, anything like that, looked down upon. Markets are supposed to be free, capital should move, the market discipline is going to work best. In a world now where we have these linkages that are so fast, where capital does move quickly, is there a new acceptance? Is there a fresh look now at the ways emerging markets, smaller economies, buffeted by these moves, maybe appropriately might take certain kinds of steps temporarily to ease the adjustment?
Let me say that that view, which you very accurately describe, has been in the making for some time. It is not that it has been reinvented or brought out of the closet in the last few weeks of turbulence. If you look since the Asian crisis, the IMF's view on capital controls and particularly macroprudential regulations to deal with hot money and deter hot money or channel it to better types of capital flows and so on, the IMF took a much more liberal view of countries that adopted those measures to avoid bubbles and overheating and such. So that's been in the making. And now that view has continued here. And of course, the question will now be, yes, we have accepted during the boom phase the use by countries of these measures of various forms of controls. What about controls and outflows? Already India has moved in that direction, and I suspect India will not be the last. But I do think that an all-out embrace on capital controls is not something you're going to get out of a meeting like this one.
Is it going to be exacerbated the first month the Fed tapers? And when will that be?
I don't know when the Fed will taper. My own view is that markets have read a lot into what the Fed actually has said and has brought forward some of the intent. If you look at the inflation numbers in the U.S., inflation is quite subdued. It's not like we have a rip-roaring recovery. We are having a recovery, but it is a tepid recovery. Let us not forget that the federal debt looms very large and interest rate spikes are very costly for the fisc. And so I don't envision a very near-term aggressive move.
So let's just slice it a little bit more finely then. You don't envision a near-term aggressive move. But with so many comments, even in the latest FOMC minutes, interviews here in Jackson Hole with Fed officials that talk about tapering sometime later this year, has the Fed kind of almost painted itself in a corner where it's got to start something unless the economy really tanks all of a sudden?
Look, at some point, accommodation has to stabilize and ultimately reverse. Unconventional monetary policies that have been a big theme in this conference were seen as temporary measures. So with the U.S. economy showing stronger signs of recovery, housing also showing some signs of healing, naturally, the policymakers have to begin to think very clearly about what form an exit strategy would take, and that is certainly going on. Now, implementation is still ahead of us, and I think, I'll take a wait-and-see attitude. But that hasn't stopped markets from, of course, speculating in any which direction as to how swift and how big will that scaling back be.
A lot of goodwill towards Japan here. What was the reaction to the Bank of Japan governor's speech, and what's the general consensus on the Bank of Japan's plan for Japan to experience a little more inflation?
I think there is general sympathy with the view that Japan has endured a sustained period of not just low inflation, outright deflation. And as a consequence, Japan has coupled low growth with very high and rapidly rising debt and high real interest rates, despite very low and almost zero nominal interest rates because of deflation, and that it would be indeed healthy to move towards a positive inflation target. I think the experiment is still a fresh one. There are promising signs that inflation expectations have picked up. I think the reception was very favorable, that things may be moving in the direction that policy desired. But, of course, my inclination, it is premature to call this a success as yet.
I want to ask you also about Christine Lagarde, head of the IMF, her speech where she talked about how important fundamentals in individual countries are relative to these global monetary policy moves. But she did talk about the importance also of signals and how important those are. What is Madame Lagarde referring to? What is she trying to tell us?
I think in her role heading a global organization, she has to naturally be concerned with the global effects of a country's actions. And in that regard, the U.S. actions have a big footprint on the rest of the world. And she was very emphatic about the need for more cooperation, policy coordination, so that the withdrawal of the monetary policy stimulus doesn't have the worst outcome, not just on emerging markets, but even on Europe itself, which is not experiencing or enjoying even a tepid recovery. When you look at the European situation, Periphery countries, let us not forget, still are in the midst of a massive credit crunch where working capital for medium and small firms is impossible to come by. And so I think her emphasis during her talk about the need to coordinate on timing and to engineer as orderly an exit as possible is understood, given that there is no synchronicity among the advanced economies, and certainly no synchronicity between the advanced and the emerging.
What's the best possible outcome when it comes to exit, assuming that, as the Fed has said, we'll be done by the middle of next year, at least with the stimulus part of exit? What does that look like? What's the 10-year yield at, for example?
I don't know what the 10-year yield will be, because you're asking a question about also the Fed is not the only holder of U.S. Treasuries. I think one point that perhaps deserves a great deal of attention is that foreign central banks hold more treasuries than the Federal Reserve does. And so even in the most orderly exit that the Fed could engineer, crises are by definition not orderly. And when you look around emerging markets, we have seen sustained reserve losses, which is a different way of saying they've been selling treasuries right, left, and center. As their currencies have come under significant pressures. And so, not dodging your question, but importantly, whether we get an orderly exit or not is not just about what the Federal Reserve does, but whether we can avoid a series of emerging market crises that would lead to large sell-offs and, you know, a more disorderly pattern in interest rates.
And in fact, might even lead to another rally in the 10-year note, which would push the yield down again.
It really depends on which way it goes. Look, in 2008, 2009, the crisis, because it was not a crisis originating in emerging markets, the crisis led to a run into treasuries as countries sought liquidity, okay? But it wasn't a crisis on South Africa or a crisis on Indonesia or a crisis on India or Brazil, or it wasn't an emerging market originated crisis. Now, a collapse in your currency can be defended, as it always been, two ways. You can raise interest rates, you can lose your reserves, or a combination of those two things. And losing reserves is tantamount to selling treasuries, not buying treasuries. So that is a big unknown in the next few months.
Can we ask you about Fed succession? Does it matter who takes over at the helm of the Fed?
I am sure that the administration will choose someone who is very qualified, and I just hope they do it soon, because uncertainty at a time like this is not a plus for markets.
Does it matter that we're going to have such a turnover of personnel on the Federal Open Market Committee? A new chairman, people are leaving the board that will have to be replaced, and even a bank president stepping down. And is there a possibility that we get a little bit of more politicization potentially of the Federal Reserve than we've seen in the past? The whole question of succession has become a discussion in Congress and on Capitol Hill that we didn't quite see when the transition was being made to Alan Greenspan, to Ben Bernanke.
I think part of that discussion is simply because we are in more uncertain waters now than when earlier transitions, when the transition to Chairman Bernanke was made, or to Chairman Greenspan. And I think, does it really matter that this change is taking place at this time? Well, let me ask you, in the last 6 years, what period has been a tranquil, nice period for any succession to take place? We have not had, since the beginning of subprime, what one would call normal circumstances. So this time is, I would say, as good as any.
And just a general question, you get up in the morning, what's the thing that most concerns you about the global economy?
I think about the global economy that the advanced economies still have a massive debt overload to deal with that has not been dealt with. And surprisingly, I think there is still a massive reluctance to tackle through more write-offs the debt loads that are still weighing down on growth, especially in periphery Europe. And more recently, of course, emerging markets, the end of a capital inflow cycle. As Vincent Reinhardt and I have written on extensively, the end of a capital inflow cycle is seldom pretty.
Carmen Reinhart, co-author of This Time It's Different, former Fed economist, National Bureau of Economic Research, Harvard Kennedy School of Government.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.